The woman refused to save any of her seven sons for even a short time. Instead, with the faith of her ancestor, Abraham, she remained faithful to God. She is the hero of our nation and our religion because she proved the strength of God's law by winning a great victory. Her courage and endurance were stronger than those of any man as she bravely survived the mighty waves of fear, just as Noah's boat safely carried his family through the flood. This woman remained faithful to God's law, even though emotions flooded her heart and pounded inside her as she watched her sons suffer and die. She defeated the raging storms that attack our faith. The Mother's Faith Defeated King Antiochus, Chapter 16. This older woman was able to watch her seven sons being tortured to death. This certainly proves that clear thinking and faith in God can control emotions. So I have proven that people can rule over their emotions, and that this mother defeated the cruelest of tortures. The love she had for her sons became even stronger as she saw Antiochus punish them in different ways. Her love was fiercer than the lions that surrounded Daniel, and more powerful than the flaming furnace where Mishael was thrown. But she used her mind to control her strong emotions. Suppose this mother had given up and mourned her son's death. She might have said something like this: "I am such a miserable and unhappy woman. I was once the mother of seven sons, yet now they are dead. I was pregnant and gave birth seven times for nothing, and the time I spent nursing and taking care of my babies was wasted. My sons, I suffered while giving birth to each of you and raising you to be young men. Now all of that means nothing. Some of you were unmarried, and the rest of you had no children, and so I will never know the happiness of being a grandmother. I was the mother of seven beautiful children. Now I am a very sad and lonely widow with no son to bury me when I die." But the woman feared God and refused to mourn for her sons like that. She never tried to talk them out of their decision to die, and she never groaned in sorrow. In fact, she encouraged each of them to die for the sake of the Jewish religion, because she knew that death would begin never-ending life for them. She was certainly a faithful and respected leader, who won a victory for God by defeating that evil King Antiochus. Her words and her actions prove that she is stronger than any man. When this woman and her sons were arrested, she watched as Eleazar was tortured, then turned to her sons and said in Hebrew, "My sons, be proud of your chance to be a witness for our Jewish nation. Fight hard for God's ancient law. This old man is enduring much pain for the sake of our religion. You are young men, and so I would be ashamed if you were terrified of being tortured. Since God has given you a happy life in this world, you should willingly suffer anything for his sake. It was for the sake of our God that our ancestor Abraham was willing to sacrifice his son Isaac. And when Isaac saw his father raise the knife over his body, he did not cry or beg him to stop. Daniel was thrown into a pit of lions. Hananiah, Azariah, and Mishael were thrown into a flaming furnace. They all endured pain for the sake of our God. So you must have the same strong faith and stop being miserable. It is foolish to think that people who have faith in God cannot overcome such great pain." With these words, the woman encouraged her seven sons and convinced them to die rather than disobey God's law. They realized that anyone who dies for the sake of God will have done what is right, just like Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, and all our ancestors. Chapter 17. Some of the guards who arrested this woman said that when she was about to be put to death, she threw herself into the fire so that no one could touch her. Praise to this brave mother. Brave woman, you and your sons defeated King Antiochus by showing courage and by stopping his cruel and evil plan. You are a strong roof that is set on top of the columns of your sons, and you never trembled or fell when their pain shook your insides. Be brave, faithful mother, and keep your hope in God strong. The moon and the stars are not as majestic as you, because you showed your sons what it means to be holy. God has honored you and has given you a place in heaven alongside them because you gave birth to faithful descendants of our ancestor Abraham. These faithful Jews saved Israel. If I could show you the history of the Jewish religion by painting a picture, the first person to look at it would be shocked to see the mother of the seven sons standing by as they were tortured to death for the sake of our faith. The people of Israel must never forget these nine people who willingly died for the sake of our God. Their tomb should be honored with the following words. Buried in this tomb are a respected priest, a dear old woman, and her seven sons. The evil King Antiochus brutally killed them as he tried to destroy the Jewish religion. But these nine people remained faithful to God and bravely endured being tortured to death. And so they proved that their nation was innocent of any crime. God certainly helped them endure in the contest which tested their obedience, and the prize they received was never-ending life. Eliezer was the first one to oppose Antiochus, then the mother, and finally her seven sons. King Antiochus was the fierce enemy, and the crowd stood watching him. But obedience to God won, and he gave the prize to these nine faithful people. The crowds were amazed and knew that these who had died were truly God's people. Antiochus and his officials couldn't believe these nine had the strength to endure such torture. God rewarded them, and so they will live forever with God. Moses said, God protects everyone who is faithful to him. That's exactly what happened to these nine persons. They remained faithful to God, and he honored them with life that never ends. God has blessed us because of them. Our enemies no longer have control over us. King Antiochus was punished, and our entire country is once again pure. These nine, who willingly died in our place, took away the sin of our nation. They suffered as a sacrifice to God, and because of their death, he rescued Israel from horrible abuse. After Antiochus had seen their courage and strength, he used them as an example and ordered his own soldiers to be as fearless. His soldiers became brave warriors in battle, and so his army attacked and defeated every enemy. Chapter 18. Listen to me, you people of Israel. We are the descendants of Abraham, so obey God's law and always do what is right. Now you know that clear thinking and faith in him will conquer all emotions, both those that make us suffer inside and those that cause pain to our bodies. The nine people who willingly died cruel deaths for the sake of our Jewish religion were respected by others and were also honored with God's blessing. Because they showed us once again how to obey God's law, our country is at peace and has wiped out our enemy. Antiochus was punished on earth and will be punished forever after his death. He could not force us to worship pagan idols or to reject our ancient customs, so he left Jerusalem and attacked the Persians. The mother's last words to her sons. The mother spoke these words to her seven sons just before they were tortured. When I was a young woman, I kept myself safe by living in my father's house, and I refused to have sex with any man. No one ever bothered me when I crossed the desert, though it is filled with demons that tried to harm me. When I was older, I married and lived with my husband, and soon we became parents. Your father died when you were very young. He was a happy man who loved you and was proud of each of you. He taught you God's law and about his prophets, about how Cain murdered his brother Abel, about Isaac, who was placed on the altar to be sacrificed, and about how Joseph ended up in prison. Your father told you about the faith of Phinehas, and about Hananiah, Azariah, and Mishael in the flaming furnace. He praised and blessed Daniel, who was thrown into a pit of lions. He taught you this promise of God in the book of Isaiah. When you walk through fire, you won't be scorched by the flames. You learn from him the songs of David, who sang, "The Lord's people will suffer a lot." And your father made you learn the wise sayings of Solomon, like, "The life-giving tree will be given to all who do what God commands." He answered for you the prophet Ezekiel's question, "Can these dried-out bones come back to life?" And your father taught you to sing the song of Moses, where God said, "I am the one who takes life and gives it again. I am the only one who can let you live a long time." God is praised. The day this mother died was terrible, but not completely. Antiochus, the brutal king of the Greeks, made the fire under the large pots hotter and hotter, and he tortured the seven sons of this faithful Israelite woman in one way after another. He poked out their eyes and cut out their tongues and put them each to death in horrible ways. God will certainly punish him for these crimes. Yet because of that terrible day, the seven descendants of Abraham and their famous mother are now with the choir of their ancestors in heaven, where God has already given them pure life that will never end. Give praise to God forever. Amen.
You have been listening to The Holy Bible, Deuterocanonicals Apocrypha, Part 3, narrated by Paul Hecht. Deuterocanonicals Apocrypha, Part 4, narrated by Nelson Runger, Jack Garrett, and George Wilson. And now, Prayer of Manasseh, narrated by Nelson Runger.
Prayer of Manasseh. About this book. According to 2 Chronicles, chapter 33, verses 1 through 20, Manasseh, the sinful king of Judah, was captured and taken as a prisoner to Babylon. While he was in Babylon, he turned back to the Lord and prayed that the Lord would forgive him. This book shows what kind of prayer Manasseh might have prayed, emphasizing God's mercy and the benefits of giving up sin and turning back to God. You, the Lord God all-powerful, were worshipped by our ancestors Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and their faithful descendants. You created the sky, the earth, and the laws of nature. Your glorious name strikes terror in the ocean depths, and at your command the sea stays in place. Everything trembles with fear when you show your power. Your tremendous glory is too much for us, and we cannot endure your anger against sinners. Yet you have promised to show mercy, more than we can imagine. You, Lord Most High, are so very patient and kind, and you punish us much less than we deserve. In your great kindness you have promised to forgive and save those who stop sinning and turn to you. If I had followed the example of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and if I had obeyed your laws, you would not have told me to turn from my sins. If each of my sins were a grain of sand, they would more than cover the ocean floor. I am not worthy to pray to you. I have sinned too much for you to accept me. My sins are a heavy burden. They are chains of iron that I cannot remove. I have disobeyed you and set up disgusting idols that made you angry. But now I surrender my pride and humbly pray for mercy. I admit that I have sinned and disobeyed you, Lord. Forgive me, I beg you. Please forgive me. Don't punish me forever. Don't send me down to the world of the dead. Yes, Lord, I beg you because you accept those who turn back to you. Although I don't deserve mercy, save me, and show everyone how truly good you are. Then I will praise you every hour of every day, just as angels in heaven sing your praises, and you will be honored forever. Amen.
This ends Prayer of Manasseh, narrated by Nelson Runger. And now, 1 Esdras, narrated by Jack Garrett.
1 Esdras. About this book. Esdras is another form of the name Ezra, one of the main characters of this book. It was probably written in Hebrew, but only the Greek and other later translations are now available. The book of 1 Esdras was adapted from passages in 2 Chronicles, Ezra, and Nehemiah. The book of 1 Esdras emphasizes the importance of King David's descendants and of rebuilding the temple, and the book also explains why the Lord allowed King Josiah of Judah to die so young, even though Josiah had been faithful to God. Passover is celebrated. Chapter 1. Josiah commanded that Passover be celebrated in Jerusalem to honor the Lord, and on the 14th day of the first month, the lambs were killed for the Passover celebration. Josiah first made sure that each priest was wearing the proper priestly clothes and had been assigned to one of the priestly groups. Then he gave orders for the priests to take their places in the Lord's temple. And he told the Levites, who helped the priests in the temple, "No longer will you have to carry the sacred chest from place to place. It will stay in the temple built by King Solomon, son of David. Now, be the servants of the Lord your God and his people Israel. Prepare yourselves, so that each Levite family and clan will be holy and worthy to serve in the Lord's temple." King Solomon built this wonderful temple, and you Levites who serve in it must follow the directions that his father King David gave for worship here. Each of your families and clans must stand together. When someone brings you a Passover lamb, you must kill it and prepare it to be sacrificed to the Lord. Make sure the people celebrate according to the commands that the Lord gave to Moses. Josiah donated 30,000 young sheep and goats and 3,000 calves from his own flocks and herds so that the people who had come to celebrate Passover could offer them as sacrifices. Josiah did this to keep a promise he had made to the people, the priests, and the Levites. In addition, Hilkiah, Zechariah, and Jehiel, the officials in charge of the temple, gave the priests 2,600 sheep and 300 calves so that the priests could celebrate Passover. Finally, Jeconiah, Shemaiah, and his brother Nathanael, together with Hashabiah, Okiel, and Joram, also donated animals. These men were army commanders in charge of 1,000 troops each, and together they gave the Levites a total of 5,000 sheep and 700 calves. On the morning of the Passover festival, the priests and the Levites dressed in their special robes and brought the thin bread into the temple. They took their assigned places in groups of families and clans in front of the people. Then they began offering the Passover sacrifices to the Lord, as the law of Moses commands. The Passover lambs were roasted over fires, just as the law said, and the meat from the other sacrifices was boiled in large bronze pots. The cooking meat smelled wonderful. All day long, the priests were busy offering sacrifices and burning the animal's fat on the altar. And when the Passover animals had been prepared for all the people, the Levites then prepared animals for themselves and for their relatives, the priests. During the celebration, some of the Levites prepared Passover animals for those Levites of the Asaph clan, who were temple musicians, and also for those Levites who were guards at the temple gates. They did this so that the musicians did not have to leave the places they had been assigned by King David and his official representatives, Asaph, Zechariah, and Adonias, so that the temple guards did not have to leave their posts. On that day, the people honored the Lord by celebrating Passover, and on the altar they offered sacrifices to him, just as King Josiah had commanded. The people who had come for Passover then celebrated the festival of thin bread for the next 7 days. Passover had not been observed like this since the time of Samuel the prophet. No king before Josiah had ever held a better celebration of Passover. It was celebrated by priests and Levites and by people who came into Jerusalem from towns all over Judah, together with the people of Jerusalem and even with people from northern Israel who were living in Jerusalem. This Passover was in the 18th year of Josiah's rule in Judah. Josiah dies in battle. King Josiah wanted to be a faithful follower of the Lord, so everything he did was pleasing to the Lord. But the old historical records show that some of the people of Judah sinned worse and were more evil than any other nation. They were so disappointing to the Lord that he had to punish the whole nation, as he had threatened to do. Several years after Josiah had done these things, the king of Egypt led his army to attack the city of Carchemish on the Euphrates River, and Josiah led his troops north to meet the Egyptians in battle. The king of Egypt sent the following message to Josiah: "King of Judah, I'm not attacking you. The Lord God did not send me to fight you. My enemies are at the Euphrates River, and the Lord will help me win. He wants me to get there quickly, so get out of my way. Don't try to stop the Lord." Even the prophet Jeremiah told Josiah that the Lord wanted him to get in his chariot and go back home. But instead, Josiah decided to stay and fight. He attacked the Egyptian army in the broad valley near Megiddo, but the Egyptian commanders counterattacked near him. He told his servants, "Get me out of here. I'm badly wounded." His servants quickly took him away from the fighting. Josiah got into his spare chariot and was taken back to Jerusalem, where he died. He was buried in the family tomb. Everyone in Judah mourned for Josiah. Jeremiah the prophet wrote a funeral song in honor of him, and it is still a custom in Israel for important men and their wives to sing sad songs about Josiah as they mourn his death. All these things are recorded in the history of the kings of Judah. Josiah did many great things. He received many honors, and he understood the law of the Lord very well. All these and other things that he did can be found in the book of the kings of Israel and Judah. King Jeconiah. After the death of Josiah, the people of Judah crowned his son Jeconiah their new king. He was 23 years old at the time. After he had ruled Judah from Jerusalem for only 3 months, the king of Egypt removed him from being king and made the nation of Judah pay a fine of 7,500 pounds of silver and 75 pounds of gold. Then the king of Egypt appointed Jeconiah's brother, Jehoiakim, as king of Judah and Jerusalem. King Jehoiakim. King Jehoiakim put many of Judah's most important men in prison, and he had his brother Zerias arrested in Egypt and brought back to Jerusalem. Jehoiakim was 25 years old when he was appointed king in Judah and Jerusalem, and he disobeyed the Lord by doing evil. During Jehoiakim's rule, King Nebuchadnezzar of Babylonia invaded Judah. He arrested Jehoiakim and put him in bronze chains, then sent him to the capital city of Babylon. Nebuchadnezzar also carried off to Babylon many of the sacred things in the Lord's temple, and he put them in the temple of his own God. The stories about Jehoiakim, including all the disgusting and evil things he did, are found in the book of the records of the kings. His son, Jehoiakim, then became king. King Jehoiakim. Jehoiakim was 18 years old when he became king of Judah, but he ruled from Jerusalem for only 3 months and 10 days. Jehoiakim also disobeyed the Lord by doing evil. At the beginning of the year, King Nebuchadnezzar of Babylonia arrested Jehoiakim and gave orders for him to be taken to Babylon, along with more of the sacred things from the temple. Then Nebuchadnezzar appointed Zedekiah king of Judah and Jerusalem. King Zedekiah. Zedekiah was 21 years old when he was appointed king of Judah, and he ruled for 11 years. He disobeyed the Lord and refused to listen when Jeremiah gave him warnings from the Lord. King Nebuchadnezzar of Babylonia had forced Zedekiah to make a sacred promise in the Lord's name that he would be loyal. But Zedekiah was stubborn. He broke the laws of the Lord God of Israel, and he rebelled against Nebuchadnezzar. The priests and the other leaders of the people also refused to obey the laws of the Lord, and time after time they insulted him by their actions. They did even more disgusting things than the nations around them. God had made his temple holy, but they made it unclean and unfit for worship. The ancestors of the people of Judah had worshipped the Lord, and he did not want to destroy his people and his temple. So he sent prophets as messengers to tell his people, "Turn back to the Lord." But the people only laughed and insulted them. Jerusalem is destroyed. Finally, the Lord was so angry at the people of Judah that he gave orders for the kings of Babylonia to attack Jerusalem. The Babylonians killed the young men who were around the temple, and they showed no mercy to anyone in the city, whether man or woman, young or old. The Babylonians took all the sacred things from the temple, and they carried off the temple treasure chests, as well as everything from the personal storerooms of the king. All of this was sent back to Babylonia. The Babylonians burned down the temple and the towers in the city walls, and then they broke down those walls. Beautiful Jerusalem lay in ruins. The survivors were taken to Babylonia as prisoners, where they were servants of the king and his sons, until Persia conquered Babylonia. It was just as the Lord had told Jeremiah the prophet. The land will be deserted for 70 years, to make up for all the years it was not allowed to rest. Cyrus lets the Jews return home. Chapter 2. In the first year that Cyrus was king of Persia, the Lord had Cyrus send an official message in writing to all parts of his kingdom. This happened just as Jeremiah, the Lord's prophet, had promised. The message said, "I am King Cyrus of Persia. The Most High God, the Lord of Israel, has made me the ruler of the world, and he has chosen me to build a temple for him in Jerusalem, which is in Judah. The Lord will watch over and encourage any of his people who want to go back to Jerusalem and help build the temple. Everyone else must provide what is needed. They must give gold and silver, as well as supplies, horses, cattle, and gifts for building the Lord's temple in Jerusalem." Many people felt that the Lord wanted them to help rebuild his temple, and they decided to go to Jerusalem. Among them were priests and Levites, and leaders of the tribes of Judah and Benjamin. The others felt that the Lord wanted them to help with everything, so they gave gifts that included silver and gold, as well as horses and cattle, and a very large number of offerings for the temple. King Cyrus gave back the things that Nebuchadnezzar had taken from the Lord's temple in Jerusalem, and had put in the temple of his idols. Cyrus placed Mithridates, his treasurer, in charge of these things, and Mithridates turned them over to Sheshbazzar, the governor of Judah. Included among them were 1,000 gold cups, 1,000 silver cups, 29 silver holders for burning incense, 30 gold bowls, 2,410 silver bowls, and 1,000 other gold and silver items. Altogether, there were 5,469 of these gold and silver cups, bowls, and other items that Sheshbazzar took with him when he and the others returned to Jerusalem from Babylonia. Trouble rebuilding Jerusalem. Later, when Artaxerxes had become king of Persia, a group of important men got together and wrote a letter to him, complaining about the people of Judah and Jerusalem. This group included Bishlam, Mithridates, Tabiel, Rehum, Beltethmas, Secretary Shimshai, as well as their advisers and friends who lived in Samaria and elsewhere. This letter said, "Your Majesty King Artaxerxes, the group sending you this letter includes Rehum, who is one of your officials, and Secretary Shimshai, as well as the members of their council and several judges in southwest Syria province. We want you to know that the Jews who left your country have moved back to Jerusalem and are now rebuilding that terrible city. They have been working on repairing the marketplaces and city walls, and they have laid the foundations for a temple. You should also know that if the walls are completed and the city is rebuilt, the Jews will rebel against you and refuse to pay any taxes. Since they are working on the temple right now, we thought that it was too important a matter to ignore, and we decided to tell you about it. Please look in the official records of your ancestors. You will find that Jerusalem has rebelled against other kings and other cities, and troops from Jerusalem have often attacked other cities. That's why it was destroyed in the first place. So, Your Majesty, if Jerusalem is rebuilt and its walls are completed, you will no longer be able even to visit southwest Syria province." The king sent a letter back to Rehum, Beltethmas, Shimshai, and the others. This letter said, "I read the letter you sent me, and I had the records checked. It is true that for years Jerusalem fought against kings, and its people were always rebelling and fighting wars. Strong, cruel kings ruled the city, and forced other cities in southwest Syria province to pay taxes. For these reasons, I am now commanding the people of Jerusalem to stop rebuilding their city. I don't want them to cause me any trouble." As soon as Rehum, Shimshai, and the others read the king's letter, they led cavalry troops and a large number of foot soldiers to Jerusalem, where they forced everyone to stop rebuilding the city. And so the Jews were not able to do any more work on the temple until the year after Darius became king of Persia. A Contest, Chapter 3. King Darius held a banquet and invited his family, the palace officials, the leaders of Media and Persia, and the governors, generals, and officials in his 127 provinces from India to Ethiopia. Everyone ate and drank as much as they wanted, and after they left the banquet hall, Darius went to bed. He fell asleep, but soon he woke up. Then the three young men who were the king's bodyguard said to each other, "Let's have a contest. Each of us will write down our answer to the question, what is the strongest thing in the world? Then King Darius will decide the winner and give him expensive prizes and gifts." the winner will get to wear purple robes, a turban made of fine linen, and a necklace. He will also get to drink from gold cups, as well as sleep in a gold bed, and ride in a chariot pulled by horses with gold bridles. And because the wisest man will win the contest, he will be the king's closest advisor, and will receive the title Relative of the King. Each of the men wrote down their answer. Then they sealed the papers shut with hot wax and put them under the king's pillow. They said, as soon as King Darius wakes up, he will be given the papers, and he and his officials will decide who gave the wisest answer and wins the contest. The first man had written, "Wine is the strongest." The second man's answer was, "The king is the strongest." And the third wrote, "Women are the strongest. However, truth can conquer anything." When the king got up in the morning, his servants gave him the three answers. He read the answers and sent for everyone who had come to his banquet the night before. After going to his throne room and taking his seat, he read the three answers to everyone who had gathered there. Then he said, "Bring in the young men, and they will explain their answers to us." They were brought in, and the king said to them, "Explain these answers you have written." "Wine is the strongest." The first young man had answered that wine was the strongest, and he said, "Men of Media and Persia, is wine the strongest thing in the world? I believe it is, because when people drink wine, they can't think straight. Wine makes everybody's mind the same, whether the person is a king or an orphan, slave or free, poor or rich. When people drink wine, all they can think about is eating and having fun. Wine makes their sadness disappear, and they forget that they owe a lot of money. They feel wealthy, and it's easy for them to talk about money as if they were very rich. And sometimes, wine even makes people forget that they have to obey the king and his governors. When people drink wine, they forget to be kind to family and friends, and before long they are threatening each other with swords. But later, after they sober up, they can't remember what they did. Men of Media and Persia, if wine can affect people this way, isn't it the strongest thing in the world?" Then the first young man stopped talking. The King is the Strongest. Chapter 4. The second young man had answered that the king was the strongest, and he said, "Men of Media and Persia, I say that men are the strongest force in the world, because together men rule the land and the sea and everything that lives in them. But the king is really the strongest, because he is the ruler of all men, and whenever he tells them to do something, they obey. If he orders them to attack each other, they do. And if the king tells them to march out to fight an enemy, they go. And they climb mountains and break through walls and pull down towers to do it. They kill the enemy, and they would rather be killed themselves than disobey their king's orders. And if they win the battle, they take all the enemy's possessions back to the king. It's the same with farmers who plant and harvest crops instead of fighting in the army. They take part of their harvest to the king, and they even force each other to pay taxes to him. The king is only one man, but at his command, his people kill their enemies, or if he orders them to release their prisoners, they do so. If he says to attack and destroy, they attack and destroy. And if he tells them to build or to cut something down or to plant crops, they obey him. All of his people and his armies do whatever he says. And whenever he sits down for a meal or goes to bed, his guards watch over him. They don't leave to take care of personal business, and they never disobey him. Men of Media and Persia, if the king can make people do these things, isn't he the strongest in the world? Then the second young man stopped talking. Truth is the strongest. The third young man, Zerubbabel, had answered that women and truth were the strongest. And he said, Men of Media and Persia, I agree that the king is great, that there are lots of men, and that wine is strong. But who rules them all? Women, that's who. Women give birth to kings and to all those who rule the land and sea. And women raise the little boys who become men and plant the vineyards that produce wine. Women make the clothes men wear, and they tell men how great they are. Men could not live without women. A man might have a lot of gold and silver and other valuable things, but if he sees a beautiful woman, he will leave his wealth and stare at her. He would rather have her than silver or gold. A man will abandon the father who raised him and even leave his own country just to be with his wife. He will spend the rest of his life with her without ever thinking of his father or mother or country. Don't you men realize that you are controlled by women? You work long and hard. Then what do you do with your wages? You give them to women. A man takes his sword and goes out on the roads, the rivers, and the seas, robbing and stealing. He is in danger from wild animals, and he has to travel at night. But everything he takes, he brings home to the woman he loves. A man loves his wife more than he loves his father and mother. Lots of men have gone crazy because of women, and many others have become slaves or criminals, their lives ruined or even destroyed, all because of women. It is the truth, isn't it? Look at His Majesty, King Darius. He is so powerful that no one from any country would dare to touch him. But I have seen him with his wife, Apaimi, the daughter of that great man, Bauticus. One day, Apaimi was sitting at the king's right side when she took the crown off his head and put it on her own. And she kept slapping his face with her left hand. But all the king did was to stare at her with his mouth hanging open. If Apaimi smiles at the king, he is happy. If Apaimi is angry with him, he tells her how wonderful and beautiful she is, until she isn't angry anymore. Men of Media and Persia, if women can do all these things, I say that they are very strong. The king and his officials just stared at each other. Then Zerubbabel began to speak again, this time about truth. Men of Media and Persia, women are strong, the earth is huge, and the heavens are high above it. The sun moves quickly and finishes its path in the heavens in one day, then returns to its starting point again. God must be extremely strong to have created these things. But truth is the strongest of everything He created. Everyone on earth asks for truth, and it has the blessing of God in heaven. Truth makes all creation tremble, because there is no injustice in truth. Many things do cause injustice, for example, wine, kings, and women. As a matter of fact, we humans are dishonest and deceitful and cause injustice in everything we do, and so we will die. But truth will live and last and be strong forever. Truth always does what is fair and right, never what is evil. Everyone likes truth because its decisions are always fair. Truth will rule as a powerful and glorious king forever. Praise God, the source of all truth. Darius allows Jerusalem and the temple to be rebuilt. When Zerubbabel finished speaking, everyone shouted, "Truth is great! Truth is the strongest of all!" King Darius said, "Zerubbabel, you are the wisest, and I will give you whatever you ask for, even more than I promised. You will sit next to me, and you will receive the title Relative of the King." Zerubbabel replied, "Your Majesty, the day you became king, you made a solemn promise to rebuild Jerusalem. You also promised to give back all the sacred things from the Jerusalem temple. King Cyrus saved them when he started to tear down Babylon, and he promised to send them back to Jerusalem. And you promised to rebuild the temple in Jerusalem, the temple that was burned down by the Edomites after Judah was crushed by the Babylonians. Your Majesty, all I ask is that you show how great you are by keeping these promises you made to God, the King of Heaven." King Darius got up and kissed him. Then he wrote letters to the governors, generals, and officials in the provinces of Persia. The letters said, "You must protect Zerubbabel and those with him when they go through your provinces on their way to rebuild Jerusalem. The governors in southwest Syria province must bring cedar logs from Lebanon to Jerusalem. These governors will also provide workers to help rebuild the city. No governor, official, or tax collector is allowed to stop the work on Jerusalem, or to enter the Jews' homes to force them to pay taxes. In fact, those Jews who are returning to Judah will not have to pay any taxes on their land. Moreover, the Edomites must give back the towns they took from the Jews. Every year until the Jerusalem temple is finished, my treasurer will give the Jews 1,500 pounds of silver to help with the cost of building. He will also give them another 750 pounds of silver a year to buy animals for the 17 sacrifices that must be offered each day to please God. The priests and other Jews who return to rebuild Jerusalem are to be set free, together with their children. Until the temple is finished and Jerusalem is rebuilt, my treasurer will give the priests and Levites money to live on. Furthermore, each priest is to be given one of the special robes that he must wear to serve in the temple. Those men who guard the city must be given a piece of land, and they must be paid wages. King Cyrus had kept many of the sacred things that came from the Jerusalem temple. These must now be returned to Jerusalem, along with anything else Cyrus promised to return. After Zerubbabel left the palace, he faced Jerusalem and looked up toward heaven. Then he praised the King of Heaven and prayed, "Our Lord, you are the one who gives victory and wisdom. So you should receive all the honor for what has happened here today. I am only your servant, just as our ancestors were. I thank you and praise you for giving me wisdom." Zerubbabel took the letters to Babylon and told his relatives what had happened. They all praised God, because he was allowing them to go and rebuild Jerusalem and his temple. Then they held a big celebration for 7 days, with music and lots of food. The people leave for Jerusalem. Chapter 5. After the celebration, the Jews chose some of the leaders of their clans from the different tribes to be in charge of the group going to Jerusalem, and each leader took along his wife, children, servants, and livestock. King Darius sent 1,000 cavalry troops along for protection, and he also sent musicians playing drums and flutes. All the Jews were celebrating as the group left for Jerusalem. A list of the people who went to Jerusalem. Here is a list, arranged by families, clans, and tribes, of those who went to Jerusalem. First, there was Joshua, the descendant of Jozadak and Saraiah. He was one of the priests, the descendants of Aaron and his son Phinehas. Joachim, the son of Zerubbabel, and grandson of Shealtiel, also went. He was from the family of King David, and so he was a descendant of Judah and his son Perez. Zerubbabel was the one who had showed such great wisdom to King Darius of Persia in the month of Nisan of second year of his rule. King Nebuchadnezzar of Babylonia had captured many of the people of Judah and had taken them as prisoners to Babylonia. Now they were on their way back to Jerusalem and to their own towns everywhere in Judah. Their leaders were Zerubbabel, Joshua, Nehemiah, Saraiah, Reziah, Ananias, Mordecai, Beelzerus, Aspharasus, Realiah, Rehum, and Baana. And here is a list of how many returned from each family group. There were 2,172 from the family of Parosh, 472 from the family of Shephatiah, 756 from the family of Ara, 2,812 descendants of Jeshua and Joab from the family of Pahath-Moab, 1,254 from the family of Elam, 945 from the family of Zattu, 705 from the family of Corbi, 648 from the family of Bani, 623 from the family of Bebai, 1,322 from the family of Azgad, 667 from the family of Adonikam, 2,066 from the family of Bigvai, 454 from the family of Adon, 92 from the family of Ater, also called Hezekiah, 67 from the family of Kilan and Azitus, 432 from the family of Azaru, 101 from the family of Ananias, the family of Aram, 323 from the family of Bezai, 112 from the family of Arsiphereth, and 3,005 from the family of Beidarus. Here is how many returned, whose ancestors had come from the following towns. There were 123 from Bethlehem, 55 from Netophah, 158 from Anathoth, 42 from Beth-Azmaveth, 25 from Kiriath-Arim, 743 from Kephira and Beeroth, 422 from the villages of the Kadiasans and the Amidians, 621 from Ramah and Geba, 122 from Michmash, 52 from Bethel, 156 from Magbish, 725 from the towns of Elam and Ono, 345 from Jericho, and 3,330 from Senaiah. Here is a list of how many returned from each family of priests. There were 972 descendants of Anasib from the family of Judea, son of Jeshua, 1,052 from the family of Immer, 1,247 from the family of Pasher, and 1,017 from the family of Carmi. Here is a list of how many returned from the families of Levites. There were 74 from the families of Jeshua, Kadmiel, Banas, and Sudeas, 128 descendants of the temple singers from the family of Asaph, and 139 descendants of the temple guards from the families of Shallum, Ater, Talmon, Akub, Hatita, and Shobai. Here is a list of the families of temple workers whose descendants returned. Esau, Hasupha, Tebaoth, Kiras, Sua, Padan, Labana, Hagaba, Akub, Uthai, Kitab, Hagab, Subai, Hana, Kethua, Geder, Jairus, Dason, Noaba, Kizib, Gazira, Uzza, Phinoe, Hazra, Basthai, Asna, Maanai, Nephisim, Akuf, Hakufa, Asur, Farakim, Basleth, Mahida, Cutha, Caria, Barkos, Serar, Tema, Naziah, Hatipha. Here is a list of Solomon's servants whose descendants returned. Asaphiath, Peruda, Jaela, Lozan, Istael, Shephatiah, Agia, Pachareth, Hazabaim, Sarothai, Messiah, Gas, Addis, Subas, Afera, Barodus, Shaphat, Alan. A total of 372 descendants of temple workers and Solomon's servants returned. There were 652 who returned from the families of Nekoda and Deleah, son of Tobiah, though they could not prove they were Israelites. They had lived in the Babylonian towns of Telmila and Telharsha, and their leaders were Kerub, Adon, and Immer. The families of Habea, Hakaz, and Barzillai could not prove that they were priests. Jadis was the ancestor of the Barzillai family. He had married Agia, one of the daughters of Barzillai from Gilead, and he had taken his wife's family name. But the records of these three families could not be found, and none of them were allowed to serve as priests. In fact, Nehemiah and the governor told them, "You cannot eat the food offered to God until God tells the high priest that you can." There were 42,360 that returned who were age 12 and older, in addition to 7,337 servants and 245 musicians and singers. They brought with them 435 camels, 7,036 horses, 245 mules, and 5,525 donkeys. When the people came to the place in Jerusalem where God's temple had been located, some of the family leaders made a sacred promise to rebuild the temple in the very same place, and to give the money to pay for it. They promised to give 1,200 pounds of gold and 6,000 pounds of silver, and 100 robes for the priests. The priests and Levites and some of the other people settled in Jerusalem and the surrounding villages. The rest of the people, including the temple singers and guards, settled in the towns from which their families had come. The first offering on the new altar. On the first day of the seventh month of the year, the Israelites who had settled in their towns went to Jerusalem. They met to worship together in the open area just inside the first gate on the eastern side of the city. The priest Joshua, together with the other priests, and Zerubbabel, son of Shealtiel, and his relatives, took their places. Then they rebuilt the altar of Israel's God, so they could follow the instructions God gave to Moses and offer sacrifices on it. They built the altar where it had stood before, because most of the foreigners who were already living around Jerusalem were their enemies and were stronger than they were. However, some of the foreigners were friendly and helped the Jews. Then the Jews began burning sacrifices on the altar at the proper times, including sacrifices to please the Lord every morning and evening. The people followed the instructions in the law for celebrating the festival of shelters. They also offered the proper sacrifices each day, as well as the special sacrifices on each Sabbath, at each new moon festival, and at all the other sacred festivals. Work on the temple itself had not yet begun. But from that day, the first day of the seventh month, all those who made sacred promises offered their sacrifices on the altar to God. The rebuilding of the temple begins. King Cyrus of Persia had said that the Israelites could have cedar logs from Lebanon, and so these logs were tied together into rafts and floated by sea to the harbor at Joppa. The Israelites sent food and drink and carts to the city of Tyre and Sidon as payment for these logs, and they gave money to the stoneworkers and carpenters. On the first day of the second month of the second year, after the people had returned to Judea and Jerusalem from Babylonia, they began laying the foundation for God's temple. Zerubbabel and Joshua and their relatives started working, and so did the priests, the Levites, and everyone else who had returned. Every Levite, over 20 years of age, was put in charge of some part of the building project, and they worked together to get the job done. The Levites in charge of the entire project were Joshua and his sons, his brother Kadmiel, and his other relatives, and the sons of Jeshua and Matabun, the sons of Jodah, son of Eliadan, and their sons and other relatives. While the workers were building the temple, the priests put on their robes and blew trumpets and played other instruments in honor of the Lord, and the Levites from the family of Asaph praised God with cymbals. All of them followed the instructions given years before by King David.